You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside. you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. The government cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great day. Going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it, but we know that it may not be. But if you got to do it, you got to do it and get it done. And I know you will, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is, and we appreciate you for it. But if you don't have to, you know, you can stay socially distanced, and you can, you know, keep your mask on, and you can make sure that everything is safe, because it's still bad out there. Believe me. And, you know, I know I saw a piece where this pastor, this Caucasian pastor, said, we ain't wearing no mask. We ain't doing none of that. His ass is on a ventilator. Wish him well, though, on the real. You know, just like that American African pastor way back early in the pandemic. He challenged it. Unfortunately, he passed, unfortunately. So you got to do that. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. And then the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And the times they're going to give are Eastern times. On Mondays, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad Ahmed. Followed by at 8, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. After that program, 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Thursdays, 7 p.m. After 7, we'll host Shani B. at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And tomorrow, Saturday, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with Sister LaWanda Chambers. And then followed from 7 to 9, Sankofa, the Elders Council, the Sankofa Elders Council, hosted with Alfonso Watkins. And on Sunday, from 7 until, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest marketplace, online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. I was on the website the other day. It just seemed to be getting more and more stuff. Great stuff. Beautiful. At WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. my good brother Bomani Tayemba, you need to give him, you need to go online to AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Check it out what he has offered. He has been taking our people to Africa for many years, over 450 of us. Some have repatriated, some have invested, some just have a memory of a trip of a lifetime. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And the trips he's going to, he still has a trip this year, November 20th through the 30th, November 20th through the 30th. And that trip is going to Tanzania, man. That's a place I definitely would like to go. Tanzania, $3,700. $3,700. $400 down payment. And I know November will be here in a couple of months. I understand that. But it's still the opportunity. And then at the end of the this year, December 24th to January 5th, Ghana. He's got another trip to Ghana. And that is from December 24th to January 5th. Also $3,700. And then next year, April 2nd through the 12th, 2021, excuse me, $3,500 going to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th through June 4th, 2021 for $3,700. Ghana, another trip to Ghana. And then towards the end of next year, November 19th through the 29th, 2021, South Africa. $3,700. Brother just he hooks it up. And your quality. He was on the program a few weeks ago. And he's part of what they're trying to do in terms of building. I know we talked about the family, brothers and sisters that put their money together to buy some land here in Georgia. You know. And that's a good idea. But also, too, it would be great to have a place on the continent, and that's what Brother Bomani is developing. Because it was supposed to have been a community, a subdivision, Garvey Town. It just didn't materialize. So here's an opportunity. So give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Renoko Rashidi, my good brother, Dr. Renoko, he will be taking his trip next year, January 21st to February 4th, going to Uganda and Rwanda. Going to Uganda and Rwanda. Go to his website, Dr. Renoko, Dr. D-R-R-U-N-R-U-N-O-K-O, Dr. Renoko. And I'll give him a call at 323-303-8663. That's 323-803-8663, Dr. Renoko Rashidi. And he also has a trip to Kemet towards the end of, towards the summertime, August 1st through the 14th. Going to Kemet, going to Egypt. Habesha stands for helping Africans establish schools at home and abroad. Habesha Incorporated doing outstanding work in our community here in Atlanta. And, of course, they're building the Akashi Project in Ghana. It is the buildings are up. The landscaping is happening. It is a place where you can live. You can live. Go to Habesha.org. Habeshaincorporated.org and find out more about it. The Medu Nectar Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, she is open. I was there last week in the Medu in the Greenbrier Mall, stopped in to see her. So she has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, and other items, figurines, and so forth. And if she doesn't have the book that you are looking for, you desire, believe me, she'll get it for you. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore. Medu. Medu means writing. There's a word that goes after that. That is, it's Nectar. Medu Nectar. The Greeks call it hieroglyph, but they called it Medu Nectar, the writings of the gods. Nectar means gods. So check her out. 404-346-3263. Another bookstore we promote is Black Dot. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, that is east of Atlanta, not far. And the number to call is 519-8107. That's 519-8107. That's Brother Kazim Diajamu. There is light in the Black Dot. And Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. They had their Thursday night broadcast last night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to listen, every Thursday night at 9 p.m., the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Do you want to listen online? blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Or you can listen by phone. You can call on Thursday nights at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. ULU. Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister Gabby, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, in the rural area, is doing outstanding work, fantastic work, deserves to be supported with what she's doing with the kids, their education, their health, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship, the things that will make you feel good about your life and the changes that you can go through. So check out Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Akabin Institute. Once again, I'm constantly and will always promote Akabin Institute because of the fine work that they're doing with raising warriors, raising young men and young women to understand who we are historically, who we are culturally, and the importance of defending that. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786. Excuse me. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, Cash App, $YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, to make your contributions. Please do so. They deserve to be supported as well. They all do. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesem. September 17th. Excuse me. Those who trade their swords for plows will plow for those with swords. An African proverb. As Mama Marimba Ani reconceptualized for African warrior scholars in her book, outstanding book, Urugu, using the term rhetorical ethic. Truth is political for Europeans. This is absolutely attested by the historical consistencies of their shameless, systematic historical use of lies, false words against others. These lies are intentionally designed to destroy others, their intent, through using their belief in the humanity of all humans to manipulate them into believing that Europeans are not trying to destroy them. It is the politics of morality, not universal morality, which rules. It's the politics of morality, not the universal morality that rules. And in the Western culture context, morality is purely political. Extreme individualism removes the possibility of a moral base, especially in Western culture, because anything that produces a profit for or physical pleasure becomes morally correct. Regardless of the truth of an individual statement, convincing others it is true is what is most important. Skilled at manipulating others' minds is the ultimate priority. Truth itself is irrelevant. It is set by the winner. So rules are meant to be broken. And because winning is everything and deception, the easiest and surest way to winning in Western society,
There can be no moral rules except those arbitrarily given by the winner. It is the master of the lie who wins. For a lie is only a lie when one is caught by those with a greater capacity to do punishment. Affirm, I will not succumb to the belief that truth is irrelevant. Affirm, I will not succumb to the truth, to the belief that truth is irrelevant. Yes, but in Western society, I mean, there has never been a precedent in this country, I believe. Can't say for sure, but at least in modern times and in communication times and television times, mass communications and so forth, that has lied so consistently than Donald Trump. And I guess because he's the president, you know, you can't just jam him up, although I like the sister on that town hall meeting when she when he was about to comment on something. She said, wait, you hold on. I want to get this out about preconditions and the fact that Donald Trump will lie about any and everything, and yet people are going to vote for him in the millions. People are going to vote for him in the millions. And now as it approaches, as I believed some time ago that Biden would win in a landslide, now, of course, the indications are that it will be close. And I'm going to tell you, if it's that close and he wins the Electoral College again, while Biden wins the popular vote, as it has been the case with Republicans for the last number of elections. I don't know about old man Bush, because after old man Bush was Clinton for 8 years. But young Bush, for two elections in a row, he stole the election with the Electoral College. Barack won outright both terms. And then, of course, he won Trump through this scam of the Electoral College. And it may happen again. And if it does, and he's the president for another 4 years, Exodus, brother. Exodus did not happen in the Bible, okay? That's not true. It's not historical. It's been proven. They debated that so many years ago. Biblical scholars and theologians all got, no, it didn't happen. The Exodus did not happen. Hebrews were not in Kemet being put to enslavement and suffering the sting of the lash and building monuments and building temples and tombs. And so, no, it didn't happen. But to me, if that happens with Trump, Exodus. Exodus. September 18th. Not to see the blow coming is something understandable, but to fail to see what has struck one, even when the blow has been received, betrays a serious defect in adjustment. Willie Abraham. Because Europeans grew up without civilizing influence, they came on the scene as invaders, with no intellectual or spiritual foundation grounded in centuries of trial and error. They simply graduated from childhood into adulthood using others' technology, machine, ideas, religion, and so forth, without learning the important lessons maturation brings through struggle in a real, not manufactured or stolen world. While others learn from experience and the interactive influence of others, Europeans came to power so quickly and violently that they never grew out of their child psychology. In their case, a psychosis that only knows selfish, insatiable appetites and aggression. Now that they have existed long enough and have unfavorably been kept in the presence of feeling, wise people, they have discovered the need to humanize themselves into mature adults. And they expect to emotionally mature without experiencing any guilt for what they have done. Their ends justify the means. This is why so much of their energy is being used in order to find inner peace, a quality they feel can be acquired via osmosis or in imitation. This is also why they are working so hard to have others participate in their maturation. In order to be seen as mature human adults, they must have someone else's approval. Affirm, I see the effects of Western lies. September 19th. How can you possibly know how far you can go if you have no sense about how far you have been? African proverb. Every African family should have a mission statement fully in line with its nation-building vision. Write your family's mission statement out on a worthy piece of paper and frame it for its protection. Visibly post it somewhere in the room where the family most frequently gathers for family activities. Read it often. Mission statements are designed to be visible, clearly understood, and agreed upon characters, pacts, between all of the family members. Such constitutions might include declarations such as, we will remove all contradictions between what we think and speak as Africans and what we do as Africans. We will unconditionally love and support each other. We will every day and in all ways elevate and emphasize the spiritual and intellectual over the material. We will rear our children in African way without compromise. We will work toward cultural and social, including economic, educational, and military independence. We will master the skills required for self-sufficiency. We will work to mentally, physically liberate African people. We will acknowledge our ancestors and live by their wisdom. We will protect all African children, remembering it takes a whole African village to rear our children. We will embrace our heritage by reclaiming an African name, language, and spiritual system. And as African scholars, we will never forget who our enemies are, regardless of color. Affirm, my mission statement guides my daily priorities. Affirm, my mission statement guides my daily priorities. The Enye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah, the Enye Sesim, I tell you, it's beautiful. That is beautiful. I want to, thought I had this thing queued, but apparently, sometimes when you go from something on your computer or tablet or whatever, and then when you go back to it, it is not there. But I want to play this because I will be promoting this for the next number of weeks until the event happens, and that is the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And oh, that is not it. That is not it, Brother Oshi. This is it.
We have a buying power of $1.2 trillion. But what are we doing with it? The Regional Coordinating Committee for the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America invites you to the North American Pan-African Federalist Convention. This year's theme is African Political Unity for Sovereignty and Upliftment. So join us as we take action and prepare for the Global Pan-African Conference. Live, October 15th to 19th, via Zoom. Register now at eventbrite.com/Pan-African Federalist Convention.
And you can do so, dear brothers and sisters, by going to the Pan-African Federalist Movement and download that information. The Pan-African Federalist Movement of North America. And on the website, you can register. I think at this time it's like about $15 and another $8 for register, $18. But after, I think it's October 6th, it'll be like about $28, almost double. So if you're planning on attending that Zoom conference, and I hope that you are, because it's not just one day, it's 3 days, 3.5 days. So please do so. We're going to talk with today with Brother Mickey Dean. He was the international chair of the National Black United Front. The National Black United Front started coming out of the 1972 Black Political Convention that was in Gary, Indiana. And Reverend Daltrey, I believe, was the first chair. Well, I know Brother Mickey Dean knows the history and knows all the activities of the National Black United Front. And, of course, he's in Kansas City, and they've always had one of the strongest chapters in the National Black United Front. The president of the National Black United Front is Brother Kofi Taharka out of Houston, Texas. And we had some dynamic individuals. And, of course, we're going to talk about their chairman emeritus, Brother Conrad Wuerl, who is now in the ancestral realm. So at this time, Brother Mickey Dean, welcome.
Hotep, Brother Oshie, and it's good to be back with you, brother.
Well, thank you, my brother. Hotep, peace to you. I'm really thankful that you had the opportunity today. I know you're a busy man in your off time. So I'm thankful.
Yeah, I'm retired. It seems like now I stay busier than ever.
I know. Always something, isn't it? I tell you. Yeah. It's always something.
But a lot of what I'm doing is you know, in the spirit of liberating our people. So that's a lifelong mission. There ain't no retirement from that, brother.
No, it's not. No, it's not. That's why, to me, for those of us, you know, who are elders, but we take the eldership and the title that has been given to us by our community seriously because of the work that we have done over an extended period of time, you know, and we continue to do it. You know, whatever I can do and support, you know, physically or monetarily, if I can, I will do so, you know, and one of the main things I know that you do, particularly in Kansas City, is, you know, working a lot with youth and preparing our youth.
Yeah, we've this virus has sort of interrupted a lot of what we've been doing, and so we're having to readjust now to this new situation. Our mentor program, I mean, we can't really meet with the board. We have a male-to-male mentor program, and we've tried to do some Zoom sessions, but it's been inconsistent. And of course, you know, I've been tutoring now for over 30 years at the W. Du Bois Learning Center. And of course, we're not going to be in there this fall. In fact, we would have been in there tomorrow, would have been our second Saturday. So they're looking at doing some virtual tutoring. Du Bois Learning Center, I tutor math there on Saturday morning. So things are changing. We're having to make some adjustments. And, you know, it looks like this stuff is going to be with us for a while. So,
yeah.
You know, we're, you know, if you're going to build a revolutionary movement, you got to take what's given to you and make the best of it.
Right. You got to be, you know, just like, you know, I was a firefighter, you know, and our motto was, you know, improvise, overcome, and adapt, you know.
Right.
So it's the same thing. If you have to improvise or you have to make something happen, you overcome, you have to adapt, you got to do that. And the fact that I know that you guys have been doing an outstanding job over the many years. I've been to Kansas City a number of times, been to the Du Bois Center. I've seen the work that you guys are doing. I've seen, you know, one of the, to me though, still, it still bothers me, man. And every time I see Malefi Ketiasante, I want to bust him in the, because you brothers and sisters had a beautiful school. You had a high school, a middle school, a elementary school, and an administration building. I remember riding in, we were coming to meet. In fact, that was that same time that when Brother Ken Bridges was assassinated by the D.C. sniper.
Right, right.
Yep.
We were in the middle of a central committee meeting here in Kansas City when that happened.
Yeah. And so I got in town, and Brother Leon Dixon picked me up from the hotel, and he's the one who told me. And when I got to the meeting, Conrad was on the phone. Although we were having a meeting session with somebody who were talking about what happened to Brother Ken Bridges. What a beautiful brother that man was. Man.
Yeah, and remind me of the name of his program again.
Matai. Yeah, the Matai Network.
Yeah, because we had started to get involved in that, and it was just one of those random things with that DC sniper. You could say happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But you're right, a very beautiful brother.
Yeah, man. And because we were working on the Millions for Reparations that was going to happen. And, he was there at that time. Millions for Reparations in D.C. with the December 12th movement, Viola Plummer and others. And, it was a decent turnout. Could always been more. But, it was good work. It was a good experience. And my pleasure was meeting him. In fact, meeting him through that. He came to because we had our National Black Firefighters Convention, and he came to our convention to make a presentation about the Matai Network, because he was dedicated, man, very committed, and he loved us. He loved African people,
Right.
Yeah. So.
And we had actually gotten some of his products.
Yeah.
And was really just looking forward to trying to do some distribution of his products here locally, but that just didn't happen after he was
right. And now I haven't heard anything about the Matai Network or if they're still in business, man.
I really don't know. Unlike you, I haven't heard anything from them either.
Yeah. So, but anyway, like I said, when they took that school from y'all, that was to me so egregious, man. So egregious.
That was quite devastating. We had for people that don't know that history, we had been working on that concept of African centered education for that school was a culmination of about 20 years of work.
Wow.
We first came into contact with the African centered curriculum that was presented by Brother Asa Hilliard. This was at a conference in I believe it was. Was it Seattle or I think it was
right?
Seattle.
No, it was Portland. But, it was a Portland baseline essay. Yes, sir.
The Portland model. That's right. Yep. There you go. And we used that. We devised that. We were able to get an elementary school that was led by this Audrey Ballard, who was just a great school administrator. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to acquire a second elementary school. And then a middle school, and finally what we call the African Center Collegiate Campus. We had a whole campus. That's what you were referring to,
right?
The high school, middle school, and elementary school, all in.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the high school and middle school were in one location. The elementary school was still in another location, J.S. Chick. But it was, but that's a period that I just don't even like to go back to.
I'm sorry, man. I hear you because I know it's sore. I know it is a sore spot, and sore spot for me, too.
But what it showed is that even though the elementary school was one of the highest performing schools in the state, now that's based on their test scores. And because we have other ways of measuring what's successful as opposed to, Eurocentric test scores. But it was successful in both regards in terms of, parental support, et cetera. And all of that had followed us over to the high school. But, among our people, man, there are always, folks that will take you down for whatever reason. And I don't really want to get into all of that long history, but you mentioned one of the people there, Brother Malife. Mm-hmm. And there were others here locally. We just had to pick up and go on from there. So.
Because the superintendent that was brought in to help, dismantle or destroy what you guys had worked, as you stated, 20 some years to build. He was in Decatur, Georgia, where I was living at. No, DeKalb, Georgia, where I was living at the time. And I was trying to find a schedule because I had talked to Brother Ajamu, getting some details because I wanted to get a schedule of the school board proceedings. I wanted to go bus him out. I'm serious. Just like I said to myself, if I see Malefia Asante in the vicinity. I go, because see, to me, that is just so egregious, man. It just hurts me to my heart that we would do that. And based upon what I know about the situation, it was a Caucasian who was on the school board who did not want that to happen. And then he's the one that helped precipitate that. But getting the people from Philadelphia, I think some woman came there first. And, you know, some of the details I'm a little sketchy on because it's been so many years. But the bottom line is that they helped do that. People who are supposed to be African-centered. You know, that's the hurting part. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, you'd have to get a Jamu to give you the details. But I'm kidding, man. That brother probably does not want to revisit that, man.
I know. Yeah.
Because, you know, he was one of the leaders of that effort. I mean, he put his body and soul into that. And he was particularly devastated after all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had to. I mean, we really had to hold that brother up, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know, he's bounced back. I mean,
Oh yeah, because he's a sharp, intelligent man. You know, good brother, man, Ojamu. That's why I'm saying. So, you know what? When I spoke about this, I felt confident because of Ojamu, whose integrity is beyond reproach. He is. He's just a good man, sincere, dedicated man. You know. And all of my dealings with him, you know. So if he said it, you know, and he said Malefi Asante came to Kansas City at night to pick up a six-figure check and was out of the town before sunup. I believe him, you know. And so to me, that's just, you know, but, you know, that's just one thing, you know. But I know. The Kansas City chapter of the National Black United Front has been a model of a chapter of doing things in our community to build up our people, particularly what you have done at the Du Bois Center, you know, working with those young folks and the influence that you have. I mean, you know, sometimes you may have somebody who is knows about the organization on the school board, or on the common council, but you actually had members of the organization.
Yeah.
Go ahead, talk about that.
No, that's true. But one other thing I want to just throw in here about, and I appreciate all the things you say about the Kansas City chapter, and not to pat ourselves on the back, but I happen to agree with you. but one of the things that we're trying to model with the other chapters is this leadership transition. A lot of the sisters and brothers that had been in the organization when the Milwaukee chapter came in, myself, my wife Sandra, who's the national treasurer, John Moore, his wife Kendra, Samori, Bill Grace, Leon Dixon, and many of the others. You know, I mean, a lot of us, we've been in the organization since the beginning. And but at a certain point, if you don't raise up some young people, transition to leadership, you know, that old saying, passing the baton, if you don't do that, then your organization can sort of down the vine. And so what we did, and this was something that Ojamu put together, we did what we call about a six-month leadership training. And there were the young people in the organization that had aspirations of leadership. We put them through a training process. We didn't just say, here you go, you know, and we stepped away. We put them through a training process on the history of the organization, on the traditions of the organization, the work we do, the kind of work ethic you had to have. And then last year, we did leadership actually transition. And so we're led by a new generation of young sisters and brothers that are doing a really good job. They've had some of the same stumbles that we had when we started, but they have been able to overcome that, and they're doing. I'm just proud of the work that those young people are doing. So organizations have to really concern themselves with the transition and bringing in new people, because not only that, but they have so many different and fresh ideas. I mean, they are fully up on all of the stuff that these young folks are up on as far as technology and all that stuff that we just barely could grasp. You know, we knew how to send email and not much past that. You know? But they've, they've done well. So that's one of the things that I really want to emphasize is the importance of that leadership transition.
Well, I appreciate that, because brothers and sisters in the listening audience, I hope you heard clearly what Brother Mickey Dean has just stated, a succession plan. We need, as organizations, I know many of the people in the organizations I'm in, they're as old as I am, okay? And I'm getting old. I'm almost 70, okay? And so we need to train, educate our young brothers and sisters who are in their 30s and 40s, in their 30s and 40s, who are primed to have the energy to move the organization forward and take the organization to another level. We need succession planning. One of the things that hurt organizations is the fact that we don't, that people hold on to those positions of perceived power endlessly to no avail. You know, so I agree. Yeah, I'm proud of that.
A funny thing was about 3 weeks ago, during the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of the Red, Black, and Green Flag, our young leadership team, they developed and promoted and carried out an RBG motorcade, you know, where we had 40, 50, 60 cars in a motorcade through the Black community. We all had Red, Black, and Green flags attached to our cars.
Right.
It's just a really powerful thing.
Yes, it is.
I asked Jamu, I said, Jamu, you know, imagine we couldn't do something like this. And, you know, and Jamu said, man, the young folks are just waiting on us to get out the way so they can do this kind of stuff, man.
You know, that's right. So more creative,
They are doing things, I mean, that we wouldn't have thought of. And like I said, they're taking advantage of this technology. So that transition is important, man.
Yeah. You know? It really is. And so to me, the organizations, particularly grassroots organizations, I know those other established organizations, you know, they have some young folks here and there, but still they're kind of archaic, like the NAACP and SELC and so forth. They're still in that same mode. There's still that leadership, like Al Sharpton's NAN, National Action Network, still in that same kind of mode. They're not as progressive as they could and should be. But yet, you know, at least the Kansas City chapter of the National Black United Front is, and I'm proud of that fact.
I'm proud to say that our chair and all of our vice chairs of economic development and women's affairs, our secretary, all of those sisters and brothers, I believe they're all in their 30s. Maybe one might be late 20s, but I mean it's just a whole new generation of leadership. So
that's fantastic.
They're doing a good job. And what we did was we assigned each one of them a mentor, an individual mentor, because we didn't want to just, like I said, because we're not leaving the organization, but we want to be able to continue to guide them. And like you were talking about the role of eldership. I mean, there is a definite role of elders in our movement, you know, because there's no point in young people making the same mistakes that we make, you know.
That's right.
If we can get them to avoid that's all the better. So we have a good intergenerational relationship in KC Buff right now, and I'm just proud of that.
That's beautiful. That is great. And I hope that other organizations and would follow suit with that on a local level, regional, national level, you know. Now understand that somewhat like ASCAC, I'm a member of ASCAC, you know, and it would be great if we can get more young people involved and say to them, we're going to groom you. We're going to, you know, be JEGNAs and, you know, to move you through the process of leading this organization into the future, make it more progressive. Take it to another level as it is an organization about studying the history of our people, because, you know, that's a foundation of who we are, is our histories, our
Absolutely.
Knowledge of self.
It's
vitally important, you know, because if you don't know where you've come from, then you may not know where you're going, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've been led to believe we've never done any damn thing, that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind. And that's furthest from the truth, you know, because the people who have done this to us, the Europeans, the Caucasians, they are liars consistently, even to this damn day. They're liars.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
and I just read something about your president wanting to put some type of an American Patriot curriculum back in the schools now.
Yeah.
He's just upset with all of this radical black stuff that, that folks are teaching, and
right.
It's against America and all of this, man. You
right.
know, so this is what we're up against, man.
Right.
So we've got to stay strong. I mean, we've got to make sure that our young people understand and know this history. Because mm-hmm. even in so many of the black schools, they're not going to get that, you know. So we have to take it upon ourselves and our youth programs to make sure that our young people get this history.
And see, what you're saying is vitally important, because we need to do that outside of the school systems where we send our children. Because in a public
right.
school system, even in some other, you know, type of school system, be it parochial, choice, charter, or whatever, a lot of the information is not African-centered and can't be taught in that way. But we need to do it. Even we have to do it, you know, just like you do with the Du Bois program, you know, on a weekend or on a weeknight. But it has to be done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, however, like I said, one of the good ways to do that is through youth programs. You know, we had our Selma Falami program, which is being revitalized, by the way, by the new young leadership. And of course, I've been a part of it. Male to men manhood training program. And so it's those types of mentor programs are also good opportunities to pass along that type of information.
Yeah.
You have total control over what you do in those programs.
Exactly. Because you're right. I just read about that. He's saying anybody who wants to institute the 1619 Project will be defunded. Anybody who talks about,
mm-hmm.
The revolutionary times of our people and the change that needed. No. So he's just saying, no, that, you know, and that's what bothers me. He's saying it and he's doing it, but yet there's some Negroes who still support him. There's some Negroes. There ain't a lot. Let's thank God of that. You know, there's less than 8% believable. I can't even see would it be even 8% that should support this man. But he's saying clearly.
Rose, you're doing slavery. We had black overseers, you know, so,
yeah.
I mean, that's always going to be the case. If you examine any revolutionary movement around the world, there are always people, you know, who are the same skin tone or whatever as the people who are conducting the revolutionary movement who work for the enemy. I mean, and that's mm-hmm. just something that we have to expect, not be surprised about, and just to take measures against that. But, you know, that's always going to be the case.
Yeah. And to me, that's why we need to be as independent to deal with those traitors, to deal with those agent provocateurs, to, you know, not to say that they did it and now we expose them. No, we're going to do whatever we feel is necessary to eliminate them. Even if it's an execution, to let them know that this should not happen with us, because what we are doing is trying to liberate our people. And what you are doing is in service to the oppressors, and we ain't having it. You know,
you're right. So, bro. This is war, brother.
It is. Yes, it is. This is war. This is war. And we have been warred upon. But the majority of our people, unlike what you brothers and sisters have done as an example in Kansas City and some other places in Houston and, you know, Chicago and other organizations, understand that, you know. And I think that for us to really assist us in this war effort is for us to come together, to be more unified, to at least,
right.
you know, let each other know what's happening, you know. But I tell you, at times, you know, when we look at it, it doesn't look good because of the majority of our people here. But then when you think of it globally, you know, because I'm a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, and we're having our convention October 15th through the 16th, we're looking to really have a good turnout. Once again, it's 15th to the 19th on Zoom, via Zoom, and a lot of people are signing up. And
I'm going to be looking forward to that one.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you know, one thing that this virus has done is that, and I have to admit, I'm kind of zoomed out by now. But
me one too, of the brother.
Things that this virus has done is that it has really brought. I mean, it has made available a lot of information that I probably would not have gotten if you'd had to travel to get this information. Mm-hmm. Like I think I was telling you, brother Tony Browder, mm-hmm. did this thing on the origins of the African origins of Christianity, and because of the Zoom technology, you sign up, and of course he's sitting in his crib, you know, with all of his PowerPoints. I mean, every single thing that you would have gotten from being there,
right?
We had brought him to Kansas City. I mean, you could do your question and answers via the chat. But, you know, we didn't have to pay an airfare. We didn't have to
right.
pay in a hotel for him. We had to pay an honorarium, you know, get a place and all that kind of stuff. And now he charged, I think it was $15 for that first session.
Okay.
And he reached his capacity, which was about 500 or so people. So
wow.
What I'm saying is that, and I've been on so many others,
mm-hmm.
Conferences and conventions and webinars that I
right.
would not have been able to participate in had it not been for this. So I think that some of these things are not going back to the way they were. You mentioned Brother Renoco. I think he's getting ready to
yes,
get it.
Yes, he is.
You know.
Yes, he is.
Because I think people are now seeing the advantage of how you can reach a whole group of people, you know, without having to do all of this traveling and all of that happen, mm-hmm. you know. So
also, too, talking with Baba Baruti and his school, Akaban Institute, being able to have mm-hmm. more young people involved at his school through the Zoom process, because now his school is virtual. So he's getting kids
yeah.
from outside of the Atlanta area and other parts and other
yeah.
cities and so forth, and his attendance is growing. So that's what, you know, I agree. You know, I've seen some really good programs on Zoom. I'm probably, yeah. I can
now,
say I'm kind of zoomed
now,
out too, because I do two or three a week.
Yeah, truthfully, I'm sick of this virus, man. I mean, I wish it would go away, but I'm just saying that it has really opened up
yeah.
some new ways of communicating and organizing that I think, you know, not only should we take advantage of, but I think that just, you know, we need to learn how to operate these things. And we do need to create our own platforms, too, because you never know, if, you know, on these platforms that we don't own, like Zoom and
mm-hmm.
Facebook, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those things could be snatched away from us one day.
Yeah, know? And not only that, I know you've heard about or read about them being sabotaged. You know, they have people
yeah,
to
yeah.
come in and throw pornographic stuff or, you know,
right,
say ridiculous things while you're trying to go into your Zoom. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So we do.
I think that's the next step is for our people who are, you know, who have that capability. I'm not one of them, but those people have that capability to look into creating platforms that we own and control.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have to worry about, you know, other folks taking those platforms away from us when we
right.
need them the most.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that can easily happen just like this radio program. This is on TuneIn. And then I was going to do my program on, which was last Friday, on 9/11. You know, the inside job that it is. And so
mm-hmm.
TuneIn was out. The server was down, so I couldn't do it, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
we're beholden to them. So you're right. I'm going to take a break, Brother Mickey Dean. I'm going to take a break. And when
okay.
we come back from the break, we'll have more conversation. You can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here, by the way, that was Benny Golson, Killer Joe. Benny Golson. Yeah, Killer Joe. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, this program, African Perspectives, from 11 to 1. And then on Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jahad Ahmed. And then followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. And then followed by 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparation with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Mondays, on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, After 7 with host Shani B. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at from 7 to 9 on Saturday, Sankofa, the Elders Council, hosted by Alfonso Watkins. And on Sunday, if it's Sunday and it's 7 p.m. Eastern, it's once again time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And that's the lineup we got. But we have on the line Brother Mickey Dean from the National Black United Front and many other things. He's a brother who has just done outstanding work. Are you still practicing law?
No, but before I get into that, Brother Osha, let me tell you a quick story about Benny Golson and Killer Joe. All through high school, I played saxophone in the band, and of course, after I got out of high school, I didn't play that horn for about over 45 years.
Wow!
And years ago, I started playing again, and then I started taking some jazz improvisation classes. And in fact, I'm still taking those jazz improvisation classes. I'm just having a lot of fun with it. But earlier this year, Benny Golson came to town and did a master class for jazz musicians and aspiring musicians. Now, this brother, and not only that, he played while he was here. Now, he's 91 years old now.
Wow.
And he's a fascinating storyteller. I mean, he's been around forever. And it was just a pleasure to get to meet him and get to listen to him. And, of course, he's known for several very well-known compositions. Of course, Killer Joe being one of the most popular ones. So just had to get that in.
Mickey, you had to get that in. I had no idea. I just chose that today because I know you were a musician and a jazz musician. I knew that. I mean, I've seen you and heard you playing over the internet on Facebook a few times. And I thought this will be a good piece to play, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm not a musician. I make noise, you know, but I'm having fun with it.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, thank you for that.
To get back to your question, I'm not actively practicing law anymore. I do volunteer work with Legal Aid of Western Missouri, and because my background is in civil rights law, housing, employment discrimination. I've done some housing work for them, and I'm probably going to continue to do work because right now we're in because of the pandemic and a lot of folks have lost their jobs and couldn't pay rent. There's going to be a lot of evictions around the country coming up in the near future because there was this eviction moratorium, but I think in a lot of places that's wearing off, and a lot of folks are about to get evicted from their properties, and I mean a lot of people. And so it's going to present some challenges, in particular in our community. And so I'm probably going to step back in and help with some of those cases, but I'm not actively practicing.
Great, because I know they will need your talents and your expertise. I mean, you're right, it's about to get really serious, really ugly. What are they going to do? Where are they going to go? And the sad part is that there have been some people during this pandemic who have made hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion.
Right, right.
You know,
I mean, there are people who have made some serious money. Many, many businesses have closed. Some were not trying to close, but eventually they had to close because they just couldn't keep up. And of course, some of those businesses had to pay rent, and they had to do some other things. So it's going to be really, really, really difficult, you know.
Yeah. Well, we're not opposed to. I mean, we understand that. I mean, that the landlords have a business also, and so I think a lot of the organizations, the tenants' associations, et cetera, what they're just asking the government for some relief. I mean, one of the things that the government shows is that they can come up with trillions of dollars and, you know, whenever they want to,
right,
whoever they want it for.
Like exactly.
So much of that money went to bail out corporations and keep them afloat and so mm-hmm. forth. So it's not like they can say that the money is not there. But so we're just saying, hey, we need to redirect some of that to take care of these folks so that we don't have a whole even more serious homeless population.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that it's easy for the government. They just print it. They just say it's there because that's what the money is. It ain't backed up by nothing but the government's word. It's there. Let's print another trillion, and what are we going to give you a little bit, you some? You know, that's how they roll. In fact, it won't surprise me that they may bail out the airline industry because they have been suffering.
Oh, yeah. No doubt, yeah.
You know, and in fact, I think by next month, they plan to lay off 100-some thousand people in the airline industry, you know, because and some of the routes, particularly to smaller cities, some of the airlines like United and American and so forth, probably even Southwest would go to, they won't go there no more. So you'll have to fly into a main city and then take transportation from that particular point to get where you got to go. Even some places that they used to fly direct back in the day, they won't do that anymore. So it's going to be very deep, you know. It's going to be very deep.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, one of the people I wanted to talk about before I get to these callers, we do have some callers, brothers and sisters, if you want to speak with myself and more importantly, speak with Brother Mickey Dean from the National Black United Front, just hit one and then we'll let you in, or you can hang up, call back, and we'll let you in so you can ask your questions, comments, or concerns. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was Conrad. You know, I met Conrad in COBRA, the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America, which was in Chicago at the Carruthers Center. It wasn't the Carruthers Center then. It was Northeastern University of Illinois for inner city studies. You know, now it's the Dr. Jacob Carruthers Center. You know, and I know Dr. Conrad's going to have a little piece of something in there too, isn't he? In that center.
Yeah,
for his constant work and dedication. So I met him there at that MBUF conference, and he was planning and preparing to take those petitions to the UN, if you remember that. He's going to take a position, just the same as what Malcolm talked about doing, you know, going to the UN and charging the United States government with genocide and charging the United States government with the, you know, sabotaging all efforts for our people to be free and so forth. So, yeah, and that's when I first met Conrad. And then I got into the National Black United Front. Those the guys in Milwaukee kind of just put me up into it. Next thing I know, I'm the chair. And me and Conrad laughed about it. But it was great to know him. I enjoyed him. He was an interesting brother, funny dude, you know. I mean, good spirit.
Well, yeah, and I think also that anybody who was a part of Black United Front during that time have fond memories of Conrad. You know, we started our chapter, I think, in 1981, which is a year after the founding. And I may have met Conrad before the Chicago Convention. The 1984 convention in Chicago was the first time that I remember spending time with him. And the thing I recall, I think I may have mentioned this to you, that I just bought a camera, my Canon 81 Pro camera.
Yeah.
And I was taking pictures, and it turns out Conrad did not have a photographer for that convention.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1984 in Chicago, and he said, "Take pictures for us, okay?" But So that was my introduction to Conrad, and over the years I just grew closer and closer to him. I mean, he's one person that I can honestly say had some influence on my life. And whenever we had something in Kansas City, whether it was a convention or central committee meeting, he would always stay with us, you know, and I had a chance to engage him even more. I was in Chicago once, a couple of times I stayed with him and Sister Taliba. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this brother was just a walking everything.
Yeah.
A historian.
Oh, man.
And one of the greatest storytellers ever.
Yes.
And I just learned so much from Conrad. Like you said, he was funny. He was cantankerous. He cussed you out. I mean, all of that. But you could not help but love that brother.
Yeah.
And his contributions will be here forever. And he's tremendously missed.
Yeah. Now, he was working on his book. Do you know how far along he was getting? Because I a few times I would call him up or try to get him on certain things, and I know he was busy, with his book, and I know he in his memoirs. Do you know how far along he was with that?
My understanding is that he'd gotten quite a bit done, and that one of his daughters, I'm not sure which one, but one of his daughters is going to see to it that it gets completed, because like you said, whenever I call Conrad, he's working on it. And I'm just hopeful that it'll get done, because I can assure you it'll be some fascinating reading.
Yeah. Well, before I had met him, he was syndicated in the Milwaukee Community Journal and with that community newspaper. So I had been reading him, because when I read him, it was just like, man, he's saying the things I want to hear. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He's talking about the things that I want to talk about. And so I really gravitated to that Conrad World's
mm-hmm, right.
Yeah, World's World. And then the last few years he's been in the Chicago Crusader. I've saved a many of those coming from the Chicago Crusader, that I would read over the program, and that would be the discussion of that day from the topic, from what Conrad would present from the Chicago Crusader. I mean, because there's just a wealth of information and that we could elaborate on, So, yeah, I can tell you, man. Mickey, yeah, when I found out that he was ill, and then I found out it was COVID, and I said, oh, man, Conrad going to beat that with his old cantankerous ass. He's going to beat that, But I was just...
Well, it was a combination of that and cancer,
That I didn't know.
Yeah, well, in fact, what had happened was that Conrad was battling, I don't want to say what type of cancer, because I might get it wrong.
Okay.
But it was during that process when he was hospitalized that they did a test to determine that in addition to that he was also, also an issue with COVID. But it's the cancer that he really died from.
Oh, wow. I didn't know. Yeah. Like I said, because, all the years that I've known him, because of his stature and because of his persona, he was always a man of strength. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He always presented mm-hmm. himself, he never looked frail. He was always, and of course he was an athlete, and he used to always talk about that,
Always.
Talk about, and another achievement in Chicago was that track. Getting that
right.
Yeah, that was a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, one of the last conversations I had with Conrad, because they finally had a groundbreaking opening for that track, and he wanted so badly to be there, but they just refused to let him out of the hospital, and that was just one of the things that I wish he'd had an opportunity to be there and see that process to fruition. But this was something that he worked on for years and years.
Right.
And years.
You're right,
but it's there now, and I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how he will be remembered at that facility, but I'm sure his name will be there somewhere.
Oh, no doubt, because of his constant effort and constant work to make it happen, and then now it comes to fruition, and it is there. It is a reality, In fact,
right.
I got some friends in Chicago, and that's one of the things I want to do is to visit. I want to go there, just like when you go to Chicago, you always go to the center, For inner city stuff, because something's going on. In fact, I think they got a comedic institute piece this month, either this month or early next month. I know one of the sisters sent me some information online about it, you know. So there, something's always happening. And then, too, they remember they named one of the streets after him.
Right.
Yeah, I was there.
I believe it's a portion of the street outside of the center.
Outside of the center, man. I was there.
One other thing I would add, Brother Oshie, is for people to continue to lift up Sister Taliba, Conrad's wife. You know, because this has been a whole tough transition for her. I know my wife Sandra and Taliba are very close, and they talk quite often.
Good.
And so it's good to, because you know, a lot of times, you know, people forget about the spouse, whether it's, you know, male or female, they'll forget about the spouse. So it's really important to continue to hold up Sister Taliba, because she was not just Conrad's wife. I mean, that sister is an activist in her own right.
Yeah.
She did a lot of work with Haiti. She'd go to Haiti, get some work there.
Right.
So she was a very important part of National Black United Front and what was going on in Chicago. So she deserves her accolades.
Also,
plus having to deal with Conrad.
Oh, hey, man. Hey, when I first met Conrad many, many years ago, I was like, okay, I like the brother. But, man, she had him looking dressed, didn't she, man? He had these suits on and man. Colors looking all right and nice-looking kufis and stuff. I was like, go ahead, Conrad.
She's a beautiful sister, man.
Yes, she is. And that was a beautiful relationship that they had. That's just too bad. But, you know, I know that him in the ancestor realm will continue to inspire and motivate and guide our people, because that's who he was, you know. So, like I said, we don't say rest in peace now. You know, we can continue on the journey.
We're trying to, you know, Brother Kofi and the leadership team, they're trying to come up with the best way to honor Conrad, you know, because he spent several years. He was our second chair after Reverend Daughtry. And I can't remember exactly how many years Conrad was chair, but it was
about 20. You think about 20?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so we've got to find, you know, the proper way to hold his remembrance in the National Black United Front. So that's one of the things that's being discussed now.
Are they doing the caravan to the ancestors in Galveston?
They are doing the caravan to the ancestors in Houston in October. I think if you go to Houston Bus website, you can get that information. But it was in doubt for a while, you know, given the circumstances, because our convention was supposed to be in Houston in July.
Right.
We ended up having that virtual.
Right.
So there was some questions about whether they would actually go through the caravan, but they are going to do that and practice all of this safety things that you have to practice. But they do want to do that trip to Galveston.
Good. That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And trip to the ancestors. Brothers and sisters, you can join this conversation. I'm talking with Brother Mickey Dean. Mickey Dean had served as the international chair of the National Black United Front. He's one of the leaders of the National Black United Front, Kansas City chapter, one of the strongest chapters in the National Black United Front. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because it is an example. It is a model of a community organization, a national organization, that truly benefits and serves our people on that local level. And if you are just joining us, early in the conversation, he mentioned the fact that they had trained some young people, those who are in their 30s and 40s, to take the leadership of that organization. And now they're doing it and they're taking it to another level. And to me, that's something that should be done consistently. We should always bring somebody along. We should always develop succession plans so our organizations continue to flourish and grow and stay rejuvenated and make things happen on that level. So if you want to talk about it, a lot of times, Brother Mickey, I got a lot of callers, but they just want to call and listen. And I ain't got no problem with that. They can do that, you know. So if you can dial one and you can join this conversation, or you can hang up, call back. That lets me know, too, that you want to join this conversation with my good friend, Brother Mickey Dean, you know. So, But how is the organization nationally now? And you know, has it grown some since I? Because I haven't been involved in some time. I know we never had a chapter, unfortunately, here in Atlanta. You know, I remember us coming here, especially when we were a part of the Indaba. The Indaba was the great sit down, and that was for reparations, you know, and we had a number of those in various places.
Well, regarding the national organization, I think that we're in a period of resurgence. One of the things, when I talked about the transition locally, one of the things that Brother Kofi did was he took note of that process. And had a JAMU design a leadership training program for the national organization, and so JAMU did that, and it was the same procedure that all of these young people around the organization who had an interest in leadership, they were asked to go through the training, and I think it was about a five or six month long process. So at our virtual convention in July, this is we have elections every other year. And this was an election year, and Kofi was reelected as chair. But again, all of the national vice chairs, we have a national vice chair for international affairs, for women's affairs, for economic development, and we have a person who's appointed the administrative assistant. All of those people are, I think they're all in their 30s. You know,
oh, man, fantastic.
So this is the future leadership of INPA. Like a lot of Pan-Africanist type organizations, you know, I mean, those organizations were at their height, you know, in the 70s and 80s, during the height of the Black Power movement.
Right.
And it's been a struggle. I mean, some of them have gone out of existence since that time. But INPA is still here, you know, after 40 years. And I think with this new leadership team, with younger members, and I think that the future looks real good for INPA. So, you know, Conrad left quite a legacy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to debate Conrad late into the night about the future of INPA, because he was saying, well, maybe it's just time to do something, you know, something different. And I said, no, Conrad, you know, we can't let it go like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're doing well now. And I mean,
good.
Like I said, we've got some new energetic young leaders, and I'm just looking forward to the future of the national organization.
Outstanding. Well, you know, and you can utilize this platform, my program, because that's what this program is about. We're about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what this program is about, and that's what we talk about every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And in fact, our motto is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die.
I don't know if he's had Brother Kofi on, but he'd be a good person to get on.
In fact, you know what? I'll try to find his number. So when we get off the air, I want you to give me Brother Kofi's number, because I want to get in touch with him. No doubt. We haven't talked in a while.
Yeah.
It would be great. You know,
yeah.
We got a caller. Caller 646. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's going on, OCN, to your guest? Just a quick question. Where do you think this whole reparations movement is going at this time, once this election is over, and, you know, whoever gets in office, will they cast it aside, or will something happen?
Brother Mickey?
yeah. Well, let me speak to that, because it just so happens that we're working on a reparations initiative here in Kansas City. We're looking to get started on putting a local initiative together. The reparation movement has been regenerated, I mean, in the last 10 years or so. I mean, because some of the things that are happening now, people would have said would not have happened, you know, 10 years ago. So hats off to NCOBRA. NCOBRA's been out there now since 1987, leading the way. But one of the really significant things that happened was when Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote the article in Atlantic Magazine in 2014 on reparations, and he used what was going on in Chicago as a model. That brought the whole interest in reparations to the forefront again. And you know, John Conyers had been introducing H.R. 40, which is the Reparations Act in Congress for years. It never got out of committee. Now it's out of committee. H.R. 40 was rewritten because the first version dealt with doing a study to determine if reparations was something that should be remedied. And that was rewritten, I think, in 2017 to basically say, okay, this study is done. Now the issue is, how do we handle the remedy? You know, how do we get black folks paid? And Sister Representative Sheila Jackson Lee in Texas has taken on the mantle, and so that legislation is in Congress, H.R. 40. They have about 150 sponsors, co-sponsors of the legislation, and so Congresswoman Lee is looking to have an actual congressional hearing on that coming up in the near future, probably after the elections. The other significant thing is that there's been two local cities, Asheville, North Carolina, and Evanston, Illinois, that have actually passed local reparations ordinances, where in Evanston they've got this percentage of this cannabis tax is now going to go fund programs for black folks. In the same situation in Asheville, North Carolina, I'm not really sure what their funding source is, but and you have just recently one of the large church denominations has decided to set aside $1 million for reparations because in the Catholic, I think it was a Catholic church, a lot of their historical churches and schools were built using either slave labor or the profits of slave labor. You have universities like Georgetown and Columbia and some others that realize their connection, the building of those institutions to slave labor. Georgetown has set up as what they call reparations, where any descendants of those enslaved people could now get free education at Georgetown. So there are cracks, what I call cracks in the wall, because I know when we used to talk about reparations, and oh, some sure you know, folks will say, oh, you crazy, it'll never happen, and blah, blah, blah. But we're starting to see now where this I mean, people recognize that our folks have been damaged, and that so much of what's happening in the black community today, the wealth disparity between black and white, et cetera, was a result of actual legislation and policy of the United States government, not only just slavery, but up to this point, and that we need to be, I mean, that damage needs to be repaired. I mean, that's what reparations is, root word is repair. And I think the momentum is there, and we just have to keep that momentum going.
Oh, very good. Now, also, you were speaking earlier about the housing crisis that's about to come into play. I would say to you it's going to be far worse than what you think. As a landlord myself, I know the only thing that's saving me is Section 8. So, I mean, it's really going to be bad. And in a place like New York, I don't know what they're going to do with the people. I don't know what the homeless situation is like in Chicago and other places, but this is about to become real tragic. And the sad thing is that it's going to happen during these winter months. And, like you said, it's really disheartening that they're going to bail out the airline industry, but not tenants and homeowners. I don't know. And do you have any idea on what you may be able to do to help these individuals who are going to face this type of tragedy?
Well, now this is a new situation, a little bit of a different situation than what the kind of work I was doing before. What I was doing before was when you had individuals who had just run across some hard times and couldn't get their rent paid, couldn't get it caught up, and were getting evicted. And so we were able to step in and generally work out something with the landlord to keep these folks from getting put out on the street. Now, what you're talking about now, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is going to be catastrophic, I think. And I don't think that landlords, you know, like yourself, should be punished for this, right? Because like I said, I mean, you have a business that you have to maintain also. And that's why I'm saying that I think that it's incumbent upon the government, I believe, to take care of its citizens. I mean, all of its citizens, not just the wealthy folks, you know, because they've clearly shown, as we talked about, that they can take care of folks that they want to take care of. And so I think that there has to be, because even with the eviction moratorium, once that's over, folks still owe all that back rent, you know.
Yeah.
And they're still going to be in a bind. So I think there has to be money infused into the housing industry so that the landlords can get paid, so that the tenants can keep up with their rents and so forth.
Well, the thing is, with Section 8, they're covering those that are in the program, their rent, which
I guess
is a government handout or whatever. But those that, you know, are not under Section 8, they just a bad situation, because you know what's so funny, and I always try to say to my cohorts that's in the industry, is depending on what your situation is, if you're getting anything from a tenant, it's far better of getting nothing from a tenant, because you're not going to be able to rent these places out because ain't nobody got no jobs, number one. And number two, those that are getting evicted, how they going to get evicted from one place and now come to your place when more than likely your rent is the same or more? I just really don't understand sometimes the logic of people within the industry. Okay, so the thing boils down to this, like I try to explain to them. If you got, I'm just using this as an example. If you got a tenant that owes you $1,000 a month rent, and he can only pay $500 or $600, I always say to them, take you $500 or $600, the $400 that's in arrears, once things settle down, you work it out. And you deal with them on that level to where, well, instead of paying me $600 next month, you got to now pay me $800. And you just work it out until you pay it off, because the bottom line is, the first time you go to court, they're going to give you another date. The second time you go to court, they're going to give you another date. And most likely the third time, they're going to give you another date, or they're going to give you 30 to 60 days. So right there, you're 4 months into a process, and now the tenant ain't going to give you nothing, and you're losing money. So I always try to tell them it's best to work something out with the tenant, as long as they're giving you something, then spending the money, going to court, because the lawyers are going to charge you a certain amount, and you're going to lose, you're going to lose that revenue that you was getting. So I don't know. I mean, we really have to talk to one another and just try to figure something out, because it's a terrible thing to see a woman and a man or whatever, and they child out in the street when you could have done something to basically help them, but because you don't understand numbers, you really rather spite your face than to assist and help someone.
Well, that's a great observation, and I really appreciate your perspective on that as a landlord.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's better to get, you know, I always say this, it's better to get a dollar than to get nothing. It's better to get a dime than to get nothing, because the bottom line is you should be able to, whatever situation you're in, cover your mortgage. And as long as you cover your mortgage, you're all right. You know what I mean? Because the bank may work with you in these type of crises, depending on what your record is with them. And you know what the key to that also is? What your credit score is, to be honest. Because the bank will look at what your credit score is, your credit history, and have you missed the payment, have you been late on the payment, or anything like that, and work with you. Because they know you're good for it, just based on how you dealt with them. And they know what the crisis is, and they don't want to be in those situations of you buckling under, because that just gives them property and more debt on their ledger. But, you know, a lot of times we as a people in a situation don't know how to talk with one another. We don't know how to collectively come together to protect one another. And we damn sure don't know how to deal on the terms of business with these sick white folks. Because the white man is strictly about the dollar. You know, he's not too caught up into you once he gets to a certain level personally and all of that, unless they that white trash who, you know, that support Trump. That's why Trump is in the position he is, because of dumb white trash. But if you're about business and it's money involved, their racism isn't as deviant and prevalent as one would think. You know what I mean? And that's what I've noticed over the years. You got money, you talking dollars and cents, they control their racism.
Okay. All right.
Have a good one.
All right, Jay. Hey, Jay, I come to find out you're more humane than what I thought. Just kidding, brother.
No, you're dead serious.
Oh, no.
That's good. That's good. I have no problem with that. And, you know, ain't nothing wrong with being a savage at times. You have to be. But you also have to have compassion for people. You know, the key to anything is to be successful is to have loving compassion for your people.
That's
and
right.
To be savage against your oppressor. But we don't understand that. We'd rather be kind and loving
to your oppressor
than be savage towards them.
I get
it. Have a good one.
All right, dear brother. Thanks a lot, Jay. Yeah. So, yeah, Brother Mickey, I had a couple of callers. They hung up on me. Maybe they had something to do or another call or whatever. So if anyone's who is on the board now, if you want to get in, talking with Brother Mickey Dean with the National Black United Front from Kansas City, Missouri, one of the strongest chapters in the National Black United Front, had been in the forefront of doing some great things. Because if you were listening to the program from the beginning, you would understand that, they had people on the Common Council. They had people on the school board. They had a school, an African-centered school. They were doing great things in the community, and they'll continue to do such because they groomed some young folks. They got some young folks, some good-spirited young folks. They are knowledgeable in the multimedia and savvy in that respect. So, you know, they can mobilize people and get the word out. So this is definitely what we need in our, you know, in our movement. You know,
one other thing I want to say, which is that another thing this virus has caused is that I just can't travel like I want to. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but my home is in Georgia. And I haven't had a chance to get down that way, you know, since this whole pandemic. I'm from Sandersville, Georgia, which anybody will tell you who's listening there, it's the hometown of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
That's right.
that's my home down there in Georgia, and I'm just looking forward. I got a lot of relatives in the Atlanta area all over, and of course, I still have some family in Sandersville, and so I'm just looking forward to getting down to Georgia for a
visit. Well, listen, man, I'm looking forward to you coming this way. You know, so please, when you do, let me know. I would love to see you and Sandy. And, you know, man, wow, I really didn't know that, but that's fantastic. And I agree with you, man, because once this virus is over, and I hope it'll be over soon, but it won't be. It probably won't be to probably the spring of next year, maybe even longer. You don't know. Because, I mean,
in fact, I was certainly planning on going with Brother Renoko to Rwanda and Uganda, and because it was originally scheduled for next month,
right?
And I know he's put it out to late January and February, but I need to see how things are going to be looking
exactly,
in, you know, to see if it's going to be a possibility.
Yeah, because the other thing is we've been so terrible here; it's the worst country on the planet that nobody might not want to have any people from America. Us included.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
You're right.
I don't want y'all coming into my country, y'all coming up in here with that COVID. Shoot. You know, because I know there's
some. I've been reading about some of the countries like Senegal is one example that I've read about in terms of how they have been much more successful in dealing with this than countries like the United States. Of course, now they've had a lot of experience like with the whole Ebola thing.
Right.
But you know, I think we need to pay attention to some of these countries to see what they're doing. Cuba is another example, and they've been still sending doctors around the world to treat this thing. You know, so, you know, this whole American exceptionalism that Trump wants to talk about, I mean, America's exceptional, all right, for all the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and how you have the wealthiest country in the world having just about the worst record in the world and dealing with this epidemic. I mean, that's telling in itself.
Well, you know, the one thing that America and Brazil, although India has taken over second place, but Brazil was in second place for quite some time after Europe had started to suppress it. And now Europe is seeing a resurgence in coronavirus. But is Bolsonaro of Brazil, who is another right-wing dictator.
Yeah, he's a fascist. Trump twin almost.
Yes, he is. Oh, man, I hate Bolsonaro. And he's openly for killing people, especially those who are living in favelas. And he's openly deforesting the Amazon. So, you know, we have another caller, 267-267. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I want to say good afternoon to you and your guests.
Right on, Ralph.
And, and want to wish both of you guys a peaceful weekend, man.
Well, thank you.
Yes. The question I had for your guests is the Pan-African movement. I hear, and maybe it's my exposure, but maybe he can straighten me out on this. I hear more of the Pan-African talk from Africans living here in America than I do those that come from the motherland. It appears to me, and this is just my talk with them, that they come here basically for capitalism. And that's their primary goal. Now, I don't know about the continent. I really haven't talked to no one that still lives there. But the ones I do talk to that come from the continent, from Nigeria, from Ghana, from Sierra Leone, and different places, their main focus is capitalism, not about unifying with us. Could you, and I know it's almost the end of this program, I tried to get my call in a little earlier, but could you elaborate on that? And I can, I'll hang up and I'll listen to your answer.
Thank you, Brother.
Okay, well, I'll briefly give you my perspective, and of course, I'd be interested in hearing Brother Oshie. First of all, you know, a lot of the Africans that come to this country come from somewhat privileged situations and may not be the grassroots types that would be talking about, Pan-African liberation, et cetera. That's just one perspective. But here's one of the things that I found out, and this is through reading and through my travels to Africa. I've been fortunate enough to be able to visit the continent about 7 times now. There is a burgeoning liberation movement in Africa, in several countries, that's trying to take up where people like Kwame Nkrumah and Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara left off. You don't hear about it a lot, but there are particularly young people on the continent that because what they understand is that most of those governments are neo-colonial governments. It's not actual colonialism anymore, but they've got black leaders that basically are doing the bidding of the Western countries and not China. So there is a burgeoning liberation movement in several African countries among young people that we just need to try to connect to and understand that folks in Africa are not taking this whole neo-colonialist thing weighing down. But you're right in that a lot of the African sisters and brothers here, you don't get a lot of that Pan-African talk. That's what I'm seeing, Oshie.
Yeah, well, you're right in the respect that many of them who do come here, they come here already educated. They come here already prepared because they came from more well-to-do families in Nigeria and Ghana, and Cameroon and so forth. And they come here, as Brother Ralph said, because they want to be an individual. They want to access the money. They want to access the capitalism that's here. They want to live in a nice home, have a nice job. In fact, my doctor now is a Nigerian, you know. He's gone home a couple of times, but he, you know, he wants to live here. And I understand that, you know. But I also understand that what
for African people, not just as us as individuals, but us collectively, is paramount for us. It's vital. It's key. It's critical for us to develop the Pan-African mindset. It's vital for us. So even though you're here, still you're talking about Africa being our home. Because I'm quite sure it makes Italians, Germans, Irish, the British, whatever, feel good about being here in this country, as crazy as it can be, but they know they have a home. Now, I also understand that many of those European, as I just mentioned, the Irish and so forth, they give up their Irishness. They give up their Italian. They now are American. But see, what American means is Caucasian. American doesn't mean some multifaceted, multi-ethnic, multicultural melting pot. Oh, hell no. You know, just as the alt-right said, we took this country for our benefit, for our prosperity, for our glorification. This ain't no, you know, and that's why you see the backlash that you see still going on. That's why you see the deep support for a Donald Trump and how he pushes the militia and so forth. You know, so I think that what's important is, and I agree with you, Brother Mickey, that some of the younger people, and that's what I experienced in my many times being in Ghana, my time in Senegal, there are the number of young people who understand this because they're outside of accessing, you know, the monetary wealth of the country, the jobs and so forth. They're outside of that. And so they see that, hey, probably the most important thing we could be is collective. And we all can share in this. And so the idea of the Pan-African Federalist Movement and other socialist types of movements have gained a lot of ground in Africa and will continue to do so.
I agree. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, we have a new sister that's over at International Affairs, a young sister in Houston. And so we're just trying to see what movements on the continent and really throughout the diaspora, really, but particularly on the continent, that we can hook up with and get a better picture of what's going on as opposed to just what comes from these neocolonial governments.
Right. Well, brother, you know, as the saying goes, time flies when you're having fun. But I really appreciate that, you know, most of the times, almost all the time, Brother Mickey, when I do call you and ask, you know, you always find a way to work it out where you can come on the air with me and chop it up. It's, I think, about fourth time that we have done this. And each time it's always been very good, very beneficial, and a lot of good information. Brother Mickey Dean.
Yeah, well, I always appreciate you asking, Brother Oshie. This is an excellent show. This is the kind of outlet that our people need. And I appreciate people like yourself that are doing this kind of work because information is key. It's critical. And it's only from sources like this that we're going to get this kind of information. So I appreciate what you're doing with your show.
Thank you, Brother Mickey. I appreciate that. Brothers and sisters, we want to thank you once again for listening on my program Monday. Brother Scott is going to be on. Yeah, and me and him are going to chop it up. excuse me. Yeah, Brother Taggart Scott. And he's been throwing some memes out there on the internet. And, well, one of them caught my eye, and we talked about European Jews. So we're going to talk about the European Jews. You know, I reason why I have railed against Christianity, only because it purports itself to be historical, and it is not. And so I'm not trying to get on anybody's stuff, but I'm just trying to say these are the things that we need to understand. These are the things that prohibit us from coming together. And that's what we need to do, and that's what I want us to do. So we're going to talk about, you know, and I know my bro Jay going to want to listen. We'll talk about these European Jews. So anyway, brothers, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a great time and a great weekend. You be safe out there. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will
Be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace, family.